Hi, this is Erica Spiegelman, and on this episode of Rewired Radio, my guest today, Jeremy Larson.
You have within yourself the tools you need that you can learn it, that you can become better at business, even if it's not your knack. That'll allow you to forgive yourself when you make mistakes. That'll allow you to ask for help when you need it, and it'll allow you to help others at the things that they need.
This is Rewired Radio with Erica Spiegelman, addiction and wellness specialist, motivational speaker, and author, helping individuals, couples, and families regain a sense of control, leading to personal growth, wellness, and a more fulfilling life. Here's Erica Spiegelman.
Welcome, everyone. Most mental health counselors are so busy providing much needed services to their clients that they often don't take the time to think about how they can expand their practices, reach more people, and grow their businesses. My guest today, Jeremy Larson, is the author of From the Ground Up, Building a Business in Mental Health. He will be releasing this book this summer, and Jeremy is here today to talk to us about how mental health counselors and anybody essentially in this field can structure and grow their business and what they must do to successfully market their services. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Erica. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I appreciate the work that you do because I obviously am have a business in this field. I have a book and a radio show, and I have a private practice and a lot of other projects that go on. And I think it's really a blessing that I was able to maneuver and learn my lessons, you know, of how to build a business, just on my own and through, like you said before in the first segment, asking others that have things going on that you admire. I think that's a really great tip that you shared. But you're going to actually take it one step further and write a book to help people. So I applaud you for that. And can you just tell us a little bit about what's that's about, how it kind of the idea was planted and what it's going to kind of contain?
So first off, in some of the promotional materials that you put out and you gave me to put out for this particular episode, there was a line at the very beginning that you had that mental health practitioners attend at least 9 years of school and training. During all of that time, not a single required course teaches a future clinician how to run his or her own practice.
Mm-hmm.
That is so true. So this whole idea got generated because, you know, we now have 5 clinicians on staff at our practice, and none of them in school got any real training on how to make a practice work. One of our clinicians was talking about how in her entire 3 years of grad school, there was literally 1 3-hour optional lecture on a Saturday about the business of mental health. And with mental health as a business, there is so much that goes into it, not just from the clinical end, but also there's accounting, there's marketing, there's insurance billing, there is corporate structures. That stuff alone can take years to learn. People who go to school for business degrees take the same amount of school specifically about business. And one of the distinctions that I like to make is that most doctors, mental health professionals, psychiatrists, lawyers, you name it, counselors, they're brilliant craftspeople whose goal is to help people. They want to go in and they want to be that first line and literally take someone from feeling however they're feeling and help them feel how they want to feel. It doesn't matter whether it's in the law or medicine or mental health. The problem is most of them get zero training on how to actually get those clients in front of them and how to bill those clients and how to keep track of all of the money parts that go in to running a business. And so what ended up happening is I decided to start writing as part of my own personal blog, an article series on different parts of building a business in mental health. And over the course of a few months, it wound up being, I think, 47 articles that were all in this vein, and it turned into a book. And currently in the process of editing and putting it all together to finally publish it sometime this summer. So that's kind of how the idea got generated. But it was also because I got to see firsthand these brilliant clinicians lose business and lose clients and lose referrals by not knowing all of the little things that go into building their practice. And the key is, it's really all about creating the practice that you want. If you only want to see 10 clients a week, you may not really ever need to do much marketing. You may just have to do a good job and meet some people in the field and get the referrals from the people you know and the downlines, like from past clients. And that's mm-hmm. okay. If that's the type of practice you want, cool. Do that. And you have to know a little bit about the money and stuff to do that. But if you want to do something more than that, if you want to grow beyond just a few clients a week, you're going to have to understand a little bit about how the business works. If you want to start mm-hmm. an agency, if you want to, you know, create a residential treatment program, you mm-hmm. need to know a little bit about business. The mm-hmm. other problem that I see is because so many clinicians have no idea how to run a business, you get business people who have no idea what clinical work is like coming right. in and creating these businesses without getting political. With all of the new money that there is in mental health and addiction treatment, you get a lot of business people coming in who all they want to do is make a quick buck. And so right. they convince these clinicians that have no idea about business that what they're doing is okay. Mm-hmm. And in the end, they can just pull the money out, declare bankruptcy, start another business. And the clinicians are the ones who get hit with ethical violations, who lose their license, who get blacklisted because of places they work at. Here in Southern California, we're starting to see a hotbed of some of this going on with insurance clawbacks, with all of this stuff that's going on. And part of it is because the mental health professionals whose only goal really is to help their clients don't understand the business end of the business. And so in a way, they're really easily manipulated into making bad decisions. So it was a combination of both wanting to help professionals create yeah. the business they want and to help professionals know enough not to get taken advantage of by shady business people.
Right. So, I mean, I'm so happy you're writing this because it sounds like you're going to be able to really empower a lot of people in this field and educate professionals on really what the risks are and how to protect themselves. So I applaud you for that. I think that's very, very needed. And, you know, without getting political, it is, there's a lot that's going on. And it's something, I think this is a whole new industry because I think there's a real epidemic going on in this country, especially with prescription pill addiction and doctors not really having an education or educating their clients around how toxic these drugs are and so on and so forth. And I just think that this industry and addiction, dependency, whatever you want to call it in general, is something that is always going to be an issue. So I really think this is going to be a fantastic book, and that's fantastic that you're doing this. So we were talking before a little bit about, you know, you're giving information to people, you're empowering people at this point, and you came to these answers, these specific answers around this subject matter through your experience, through putting in the time, through taking action. And we were discussing that, you know, just as people that are helpers or healers, you also have a business of your own, that it's okay not to have all the answers. And you were telling me that at some point in your life, you realized that you don't have to have the answers, but you thought you did. You always had to respond. You always had to have the right thing to say. And I think that's really relevant because I think a lot of us that are probably listening, you know, don't have answers to everything, but how we can kind of begin to embrace that instead of resist it.
So you're absolutely right. So one of the ways that I really learned how not to have all the answers was by watching the different people that I worked for and respected and worked with and respected and how they would handle it. Our CEO and founder has been a private practice therapist for 30 years. She had learned enough to run her business as a private practice therapist. And she also had never done anything bigger than that. She had never created a giant business. She had spoken a few times, but really didn't know how to focus on that and start marketing herself and that. And so when her and I started having conversations about, you know, the things she could do, she never sat there and tried to, you know, use her experience to disregard anything that I was suggesting. She didn't always agree with things, and we would discuss that. But she was absolutely willing to say, you know, I really don't know anything about Facebook marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you teach me something? She would say something about, like, you know, I'm not really good at the accounting stuff. Can you teach me this? And it was always that I don't know it, so teach me. If I would ask her a question that she didn't know, she would be happy to admit not knowing and ask for help, whether it was from me or one of the other clinicians. You know, this is someone who's near the top of her field as a clinician and is absolutely willing to learn from our newest intern, who actually just got out of school and so in many ways has much more current clinical knowledge and research knowledge than she does, because she graduated from her master's program 30 years ago. And seeing someone at the top level of her field, whose business is growing, whose reputation is phenomenal, willing to go, you know what? You know more than me about this, so show me. It really helped me to realize, and it actually, every time she did that, it made me feel really good. And so I realized that by allowing other people to teach me, and by admitting that I don't know, I'm giving them a chance to learn or to teach or to be useful themselves, instead of always trying to have the answer. Instead of, and even as a clinician, the same idea kept springing up. I don't have to know how to fix the client. What I have to know is how to help them fix themselves.
Totally. And it creates a feeling of also being humble. And I think that's very grounding. Like, she sounds like she was very humble. And it probably really helped you to understand that there's nothing wrong with not knowing, that that there's actually a huge gift in keeping an open heart and an open mind to other people that have had different experiences or who are just wired differently than you. You know, I think it's just a great lesson overall.
Absolutely. And one of the coolest things of leadership that I have learned in all of this is really it goes back to Carl Rogers. Carl Rogers in his person-centered therapy had this idea that every single client, every single person has within them the tools they need to succeed and to make the changes. And the only job of the clinician, the only job of the leader, is to give them that unconditional positive regard and help them facilitate the change within themselves. And so if you take that out of the clinical sense and you start putting it into leadership, all of a sudden, as you're trying to build a business, realizing that you have within yourself the tools you need, that you can learn it, that you can become better at business, even if it's not your knack, that'll allow you to forgive yourself when you make mistakes. That'll allow you to ask for help when you need it, and it'll allow you to help others at the things that they need. So it's taking kind of that clinical mindset and how you help people and also giving them that same outside of the clinical realm.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And just to reintroduce you, my guest today is Jeremy Larson, and he is the author of From the Ground Up, Building a Business in Mental Health. And like you were sharing before about writing the book and the process of writing the book, I just want to make sure everybody knows who they're listening to today, because I think it's fascinating that your journey actually is very similar to mine, where I had a lot of different blogs that I had written and I had a lot of different groups that I taught and I was creating content, and all of a sudden that content presented itself and I thought, wow, this would be fantastic content for a book, and to change it a little bit. But I just wanted, I want people to hear this who are listening, that take a look at what kind of things in your life are sustaining you or fulfilling you, and try and look at that everything has a purpose. And even these like creative endeavors that you do on the side, maybe, or a hobby that you've always loved, but you know, you haven't really, you know, gotten into that for a business per se, but to kind of take a look at your life like this, because it fascinates me when I hear these stories like your own of how, you know, how a book came to be, you know, and it came to be because of some other endeavors you were doing. So do you actually talk to people about this, people that are kind of off their purpose, or they feel like they're kind of going in circles and they don't really know how to find the path, but do you help people kind of structure their lives in a different way or make them more mindful of some of the other things they're doing?
Absolutely. So I can give you two quick examples of two friends of mine that through accidental, well, not really accidental, but like conversations and like discussions that we had, they actually completely designed their life in the way that they wanted. One of my friends, for many, many years, he was a DJ. And he was just the kind of DJ who would get gigs, pay his bills. He always had a job on the side. And he and I were talking one night, and he wanted to start a radio show using his, like, DJ ability and some of the people he knew, but he didn't really know how to go about it. And so we sat down and, like, went piece by piece. And this was just as friends. This was not a business endeavor for me. This was just me using some of the skills that I had learned. And we started talking about, okay, how many DJs do you need per week on your show? And he gave me a number, and I was like, okay, and how many people do you have to ask to get one DJ? And he gave me a number, and I was like, and how many times a week do you think you need to go out and watch DJs at clubs and stuff to get that number of people to ask to have that number of DJs? And so we went through all of this different stuff and planning out, like, what he would need to do. And he realized he would have to go out 4 or 5 nights a week and talk to this many number of DJs. He would have to make this number of phone calls and to get the 3 DJs he needed every week for this radio show. And
sounds like a lot.
This was, it seems like a lot, but this is all stuff that he was already doing. He just now had a framework for it. And so he took that framework and ended up taking that idea and starting to apply it to everything. He actually applied it to when he went back to school and doing sound engineering. And now he works as a sound and lighting engineer for a very large event production company. And he's kind of let the DJing stuff go on the wayside because that was his hobby. But the skill he learned of organizing his life around what he needed to do to accomplish whatever goal X was and breaking it down into the individual steps changed the way he did it and turned into his career. Another one of my friends, her and I were having a conversation about how she wanted to work in the fashion industry and create her own fashion line. And what ended up happening, she had been working retail for years. We ended up talking, I was like, why don't you start just writing a blog about your experiences working in retail and helping people to pick fashion and your opinions on certain fashion trends and all of that. And she started doing it. And within 6 months of starting this blog, she ended up getting contracted by a major fashion designer up in LA and being offered a job working as a fashion writer. And 2 years later, she, same designer, she ended up being able to work on a couple of the designs with this designer. And her career just evolved out of the simple idea of write down your experience and see what happens. Because
wow,
I guarantee
that's so cool.
There are people out there who want to hear an experience similar to theirs, or at least something that relates to what they're doing. There are people who will read it, you know, learn the venues. For her, it was actually Pinterest, Facebook, and I forget the third one, but there was actually 3 platforms that were perfect for that. For someone like me who's working in mental health, LinkedIn is actually a far better platform than something like Pinterest. But it was learning what was good for her to get people to read it, and then all of a sudden, it turned into a career for her. And so experiences like that for me kind of fed into this idea when I was writing. I was like, oh, I could totally turn this into a book. And I could turn this into, you know, a way to change some of the conversation in mental health around some of these things. I'll give an example. Marketing is almost a dirty word in mental health. When you think of advertisement, people are like, well, I don't want, like, we can think of the classic commercial on TV of, I was an addict for 10 years and now I'm not. And it just makes us cringe watching commercials like that. And there is this mentality in mental health and somewhat in medicine that marketing is bad. Well, those little things that I was talking about where people were just creating something for someone else to read, that was actually marketing. Without them even knowing it, they were doing marketing by giving back to a community. And so simply giving back to their community, marketing themselves, and all of a sudden it turned into a career. So as a mental health professional, when you think of marketing, you don't need to think of marketing as, I'm going to go pay for these terrible ads on TV. You can think of marketing as, I'm going to write and create content and things for the community. I'm going to speak. I'm going to train people. I'm going to write a book. Whatever the, I'm going to do this to help others, all of a sudden you're marketing your practice. All of a sudden you're building up your reputation. There's a reason that these big programs, you know, they mm-hmm. provide networking and CEU luncheons. They're giving back to the community for free so that people know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
It's not a dirty word. Marketing yourself, telling your story, telling people why you can actually help someone in a way that's useful and helpful to them, that's not bad. And so it's things like this that really drew me to trying to help mental health professionals look at it differently and change the way they think about their business. It's not numbers. It's not X's and O's. It's not lines on a spreadsheet. It's what are you doing that's helping someone?
Mm-hmm. But I think that there's also something, one more thing to this is like feeling like you're worthy of it, feeling that you, not that I think a lot of clinicians are helpers and healers. They're not so much inclined to sell themselves. So I think it's a matter of them getting used to saying, you know, I have something inspiring to share. I have tools. I have tips. I know the way out. I could lead them to the light, you know, and believe in themselves enough to ask for what they need. And I think a lot of people in this field, you know, whether you're a hypnotherapist, an acupuncturist, a counselor, a therapist, a interventionist, whatever it is you're doing and helping people, I feel like they're not as probably prone to asking for what they need in that sense. And I think that I think your book's going to be fantastic for that. And I think that there's a real need for people to kind of stand up for themselves and say, you know, I'm worth creating a business. I'm worth generating more money than I have, you know? And I think that is just all emotional and mental that we have to address as well.
Well, and, you know, one of the things that I ask people when I try and help them start to organize this stuff and start to build whatever they're trying to build is, what are you good at and what are you bringing to the table? And I'm going to use myself as an example here. I do clinical work at an IOP, and I'm good at it, but it's not, like, really what I'm best at. Like, I'm good. I have a good education. I have some good skills. But I really don't have some of that, like, warmth and, like, true empathy that makes mm-hmm. the amazing clinicians in this field. Mm-hmm. I'll always be passable. I'll always be able to help people, but I will never be that, like, that phenomenal clinician that in like two or three sessions can dive down to the heart of the problem mm-hmm. and really create that change. But what I am good at is I'm good at educating. I am mm-hmm. really good at finances. I'm good at organization. And so learning what I'm good at and how I can be of use to people and being okay with that, being okay with, you know what, I'm really not going to be the best at this. So I'm going to focus my energies on doing the thing that I am good at that can help people even more. Because the footprint that I could have as a clinician is going to be fairly limited. But the footprint mm-hmm. of people I can help as a professional who helps clinicians do their best work is far, far greater. And so when I talk to people, one of the questions that I really try and hone in on with them at first is, what are you best at? Are you great with working with addicts and alcoholics? Are you great with working with trauma? Are you great with working with borderline personality disorder? One of our clinicians is phenomenal working with borderlines, and I keep trying to get her to write articles about it. And her response is always, I don't want to attract more of them. But the truth of the matter is she has this way with dealing with borderlines. And so if she really wanted to turn that into a skill set, it doesn't matter if she makes money off that. She has an ability right there to really, really, really do a lot of good and help a lot of people by focusing mm-hmm. in on that thing that she's good at. She's good at a lot of other things, but like that's just one of those that we see her doing it and we're like, you can have them. Good on you.
Right. That's fantastic.
And the same thing is true of every clinician. They all have talents. Every doctor, every lawyer, every psychiatrist, every clinician that wants to help people has something that they're good at. And so learning mm-hmm. to focus on what you're good at, teach other people what you're good at, and be okay with letting people know what you're good at is really the essence of all of the marketing side of the business.
Absolutely. And helping them identify that and having them like embrace it, lean into it, I think is really so fantastic. And then it becomes something where it's not so much hard work because it is a natural kind of gift that you have. So I really appreciate that. Jeremy, can you, you know, I'm excited for your book. First of all, I just want to just say the name of the title one more time. It's From the Ground Up, Building a Business in Mental Health, which will be published soon. And I know you work for you started Coherence Associates, and you're also obviously in Southern, let's say Orange County, right? And that's where you guys
are located? North County, San Diego.
Oh, North County, San Diego. Okay, so for anybody that's kind of in that area, you could find Jeremy at coherenceassociates.com. That's Coherence associates.com. And also you said you have facebook.com/coherenceassociates on LinkedIn. You could find Jeremy Larson there. And it was really just such a pleasure talking to you. You have such great experience. You're helping others. You're helping clinicians. It's just all around just wellness and goodness. So I really appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you very much, Erica. And I enjoyed being on the show, and I hope to maybe do this again sometime.
Would love that. Would love that. Thank you very much. Of course. You're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. Remember to catch every episode of Rewired Radio. Just hit subscribe and rate and review us. Let us know how we're doing. This episode of Rewired Radio has been produced by RadioMD.com, award-winning health talk 24/7. I'm Erica Spiegelman. You could find me at Erica Spiegelman on Twitter. Also check out my show page at RadioMD.com for all my past episodes. Thank you for listening, and stay well.